implementing any restrictions?
Well, if the city thinks they're going to try an overly restrictive carry ordinance or continue the ban one way or the other that they have today, then, you know, yeah, that will be used as a vehicle to seek an injunction against the city and prevent them from, you know, trying to just act unilaterally.
You say an overly restrictive ordinance. What if the city were to, I'm guessing, surprise you, but what if the city were to pass something that was deemed not overly restrictive, that, you know, allowed some form of concealed carry? Do you envision any scenario that that'll happen? Or will you judge on the merits, or is it any city ordinance would be intolerated because you don't want a patchwork?
Are those pigs flying out your window?
No way, no how. Given the political dynamics in Chicago, that's not going to happen.
You look at what they're doing. They're already starting to mess with people on their renewals for the Chicago firearms permits. So what? They want to be exempt. They don't want people owning guns in the city. They've made it as difficult as possible. I don't see them, you know, being anywhere near reasonable or rational on the subject.
We're seeing Tom Dart be out in front on this issue. Do you expect to hear that sort of rhetoric or action beyond rhetoric in other communities?
I don't think there'll be too many. Remember, there were about, I don't know, a dozen cities that had handgun bans when we challenged the Chicago ordinance. And after the Supreme Court ruled in our favor and it failed, you know, most of those guys just fell by the wayside. It didn't even, you know, it was the threat of a lawsuit that they just fell. So you only had two places stick it out, Chicago and Oak Park. I think that the majority of cities are running lean on budget. I don't think they want to be spending hundreds of thousands of dollars in lawyers' fees in a losing case, much less paying our attorneys' fees. So, no, I really don't think that it's going to be that big of a problem.
Beyond the overly restrictive, I mean, Chicago, as you said, pigs fly, but there might be some communities that say, okay, we don't trust the Illinois General Assembly to get its act together. And we look at what's happening with the budget, with pensions, maybe they won't meet this deadline. We don't want constitutional carry, so we want something on the books that is going to at least provide some sort of regulation on guns so it's not a free-for-all. Is that tolerated? Do you think communities should or should not do that?
I don't see how it's workable, because if I'm passing through a community, what are they going to do for non-residents, much less the residents they have? I think a lot of municipalities have their law enforcement resources stretched to the limit as is. The only way this is going to work is under a statewide uniform standard, one state, one law. So I just don't see they're going to do what? They're going to gear up for a process that may be invalidated in 30 days or less, depending. You know, it's probably 50-50 that we're going to get a carry law at this point. But you've pointed to some very notable failures of the leadership of the state with pensions, with a budget, with a backlog of bills. So I think it's right for people to be very skeptical about what's going to happen in the General Assembly, because we're unyielding in, you know, what we think the law needs to be. It needs to be shall issue. It needs to be statewide. It needs to have preemption in it to stop municipal regulation of this act. It needs to allow for people to move freely throughout their daily lives and with, you know, a minimal number of restrictive places. We've heard the latest proposal from Chicago is they don't want you to carry within 1,000 feet of a school. Well, you start putting all those red circles up, and it means the city's a no-carry zone. It's just another way of saying the word ban. So that's where we are.
I've heard some talk that this gun issue alone could mean overtime session for the Illinois General Assembly, that they're going to press to that limit. This isn't a May 31st issue. If they've got until June 8th, they're going to take it. May even go beyond. Could that perhaps help negotiation?
It might, but I've cleared my calendar for that week.
You just came back from a convention. What was that convention? And can you just explain how, in interacting with people from other states, they perceive Illinois and this situation?
Well, I just came back from the National Rifle Association annual convention where 70,000 gun owners got together and NRA members to, you know, share some camaraderie as well as talk about the issues of the day. There were some leadership training seminars that took place for grassroots activists. There was the annual members meeting that took place. You know, some wonderful speeches and addresses by, you know, people from Governor Perry, to Oliver North and to Sarah Palin and some other people. It's really, you know, a good family environment there. There's a lot of people that have their eyes on Illinois. We were making some great gains. I think when you look at some of the left-leaning states, they're kind of amazed that the anti-gunners don't get their way here and how it is that we prevent them from having their run of the legislature. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about Illinois, pro, con. They're interested to see what's going to happen with the Kerry debate here. We've been a hotbed of litigation as of late, and there's, you know, we've got litigation that's still pending, and I would wager to say there's probably more coming.
You brought up a very interesting question there. Illinois is known as a blue state. Supermajorities of Democrats in both the House and the Senate, including a lot from the city of Chicago, and we know and we've spoken about where the city's leaders stand on gun control, and that is they want very strict regulations. How has this happened in Illinois that anti-gun groups haven't really been able to get their way this year, at least as much as they hope for and try for?
Because they don't have the majority of the legislature. It's just that simple. They don't have a majority in the House, and they don't have a majority in the Senate.
What makes Illinois different and special that Illinois for so long was the only state without a concealed carry? And what changed?
Well, I think the biggest thing has always been the city of Chicago and the mayor. You know, they've acted like petty tyrants and petulant little children. And so, you know, and the current mayor is acting the exact same way. And so now they don't control a majority of the state. They just don't. And so the majority of the state is outside the city of Chicago. And so whether it's Republican or Democrat, the majority of those, you know, a majority of the House, 60-plus members, don't agree with that position, and a majority of the Senate doesn't agree with that position. And now I think the court case is just kind of, you know, let the genie out of the bottle that here you go. You have to do something, like it or not. And our friends have said we've waited a long time, we're going to wait a little bit longer, and we're going to demand a good law.
That was Amanda Vinicky speaking with the representative from the NRA in Springfield. To hear that interview and much more, visit us online at will.illinois.edu. And to see all of our coverage of the concealed carry issue, we're going to be putting together even more in the coming weeks as we find out what is going to be happening with that particular legislation. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580.
WILL programming is made possible by Country Financial Representative Scott Jackson, Village at the Crossing in Champaign. Since 1990, offering U of I faculty, staff, and employees planning advice and retirement solutions designed to balance current needs and provide for future financial security. Online at scottjacksonfinancial.com.
Most U.S. students say they don't learn much about climate change in class. For now, the lessons come from a nonprofit group in school auditoriums.
Can you believe that the average American teenager uses about 21 football fields of the Earth's resources to live?
Filling the education gap on climate change, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 7th of May, 2013. It was on this day, 1952, a British scientist, Jeffrey W. A. Dummer, first presented the concept of the integrated circuit, the microchip, the basis now for all modern electronic equipment. The integrated circuit, an advanced form of the electrical circuit made up of a transistor, a resistor, a capacitor, and a diode, linked together. The transistor, which controls the electrical power, turning it on and off, was a big advance over the vacuum tube. Vacuum tubes, like light bulbs, they eventually burn out, create a lot of heat. The transistor came along in 1947. The transistor, which has many circuits which must be soldered together, and it takes time for the signal to travel through all of them. Jeffrey Dummer, radar scientist for the Ministry of Defense in Great Britain, was the one who got the idea of making the various parts out of a single piece of silicon, which would speed up the signal and do away with all that soldering, and it would be much smaller. He presented his paper on this day, 1952, at the U.S. Electronic Component Symposium. The Americans were willing to invest in his idea. The British were not, and it was years before the United Kingdom had a semiconductor industry. The integrated circuit, the microchip, now used to run our computers, our phones, our watches, calculators, microwaves, TV stereos, cars, refrigerators, pretty much anything that you plug in. It's the birthday of the English writer Angela Carter, born in Eastbourne, England in 1940. Primarily a novelist, moved from magical realism to science fiction to gothic horror to surrealism in her work, died of lung cancer in 1992. The Australian novelist Peter Carey, born on this day, 1943, in the little town of Bacchus Marsh in Victoria, worked in advertising, had his own ad agency, had a partner who did most of the day-to-day work. Carey would drop in a couple of afternoons a week, spend the rest of his time writing. Author of many novels, including Illywacker and Oscar and Lucinda, for which he won the Booker Prize. And it's the birthday of the poet Robert Browning, born Camberwell, England, 1812, famous for his love affair with the poet Elizabeth Barrett, with whom he eloped and moved off to Florence, Italy. After her death, he wrote several plays, none of which were successful, but writing for the theater taught Robert Browning how to use the dramatic monologue to reveal character, and the dramatic monologue became a defining characteristic of his work and also a big influence on T.S. Eliot, Robert Frost, Ezra Pound, and others. Here's a poem for today by Ingrid Swanberg entitled On the Way to Santa Rosa. My father and I stood in the still heat of the churchyard, grown wild with tall grasses and red-winged blackbirds, burrs and loops of song. The pews inside were gone, bees hived in the rafters above the altar, the anger of the Baptist long silent, and the boarded windows let in streams of moted light. My father was a man who read the gentleness of the mountain in the clear stream. I was afraid he was ashamed that his old church stood so small in the wild grass, but he smiled with an easy heart. A poem by Ingrid Swanberg, On the Way to Santa Rosa, from Ariadne and Other Poems, published by Bottom Dog Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.